Hello and welcome back to the Foxy Property Chat Podcast. Jake, it's been a while since we've done a podcast.
It has. How long has it been?
Months. Many, many months. So now it's just you and I today because we're doing a new podcast format.
A little bit different.
Yeah. So I don't have a name for it yet, but we'll come up with something. But basically we will be focusing on business and marketing side of a home staging company.
So the running a business, not the staging tactics itself.
Correct. Actually, yeah, not at all.
Makes sense.
That's the point of it. Now, I am also throwing in a bit of a... So I've got some stuff I found on LinkedIn, posts and pictures and quotes and things like that. And my goal is to... Well, the aim is to get you to comment on those and myself as well. So
cool.
We'll touch on... I suppose I can really only touch on more the marketing side of things, but... Yourself, you'll be doing most of the heavy lifting here. Is that okay?
Let's do it.
Okay. So before we start, before we start on the quotes and whatnot, we held a conference about just over a week ago, and we've spoken about that. We've done a recap video, but I just want to talk to you. Most of the people there were business owners, or at least sort of co-owners or higher up in their companies. What are some of the common challenges that you heard from the people who you were speaking to?
So I guess they ranged from very tactical things, you know, in the day-to-day business, things that they, depending on their market and their kind of business model, struggle with. Mm. So things like, how do we charge for extension? What are our extension rates? How do we charge for extensions of our hire period? And how to have those conversations.
There was a lot about that, wasn't there?
Very much in the detail.
Yeah.
All the way up to, you know, the business owner side of things, like staff, people.
That was probably the major one, hey, staff.
Yeah, and that, I guess, is something that we spent a lot of time on. We had a couple of sessions on that, and it was a, I kind of did my session on people, and then we had the Q&A panel, and a lot of those questions with other staging businesses were people related as well. So they're probably the major ones. The major ones, yeah.
Yeah, and from a marketing point of view, because people obviously know I do the videos, so they come up and chatted to me, and I think it mostly comes down to the question came out in the form of, I don't really know what to post. What should I be posting? Mm-hmm. I don't know what's really holding them back. I couldn't quite delve too deep there and then, but it's either some sort of fear of looking stupid or not seeming like an expert. And also they don't, I think, know how to do video, not even equipment. I think those things are excuses.
What you just said is exactly right. I think they're excuses, and that sounds harsher than maybe we mean it to be, but they're finding reasons not to.
Yeah.
And those reasons are things that are very easily overcome. So it's coming up with an idea, like the whole, I don't know what to film or what to post about, or I'm too busy doing my day-to-day, I'm too busy doing the install, so I don't have time to film or take pictures. And both of those, if you actually look at them, are pretty easy to overcome. And I think it comes back to, you know, what Gary Vee says, you're judging yourself. You're too worried about what maybe somebody else thinks or some version of that where it's some sort of fear.
Yeah, I do understand the second part there, the lack of time and stuff, because if you go back to before I worked here, there wasn't a lot of, like, you guys were doing some, but there would be then weeks, maybe even a month, of when there was barely anything going.
Well, so you go through this up and down cycle where you had time, so you did some videos on site, and then you got busy, so it just went out the window. Yeah.
And fair enough, like the next day you're organising jobs, you've got your own life to worry about as well, kids and whatever else. So the last thing you really want to be doing at 11 o'clock at night when you're still sorting out stuff for work for the next day is then going to make a post. Like, you're just not going to do it.
No.
So I understand that part.
Yeah, that's true.
But I think if you can get started and you do have a plan for the videos you can create in a short amount of time as possible, then that can overcome that. And that's why I was thinking, preparing for next year, because you said I'll probably be doing some sort of talk or workshop next year. Unless things change, I'm thinking, I'm just gonna give people like 5 examples. Here's what you can do, and this is super, super easy, maybe like 2 or 3 super easy, quick, and then for someone who wants to take it to the next level, like practical, here's how you do it, it's so easy.
And maybe a demonstration on how to actually do it, because it's easy to sit back and talk about it, but to actually see how easy it can be.
Yep,
I like it.
Now, a quote here I wrote down, I want to get you to expand on maybe why you liked it, because you said you liked this in the recap video. Are you too busy to be brilliant?
So this is one that Phil Nosworthy mentioned, and I'd heard that before, and he said a couple of different versions of it. Are you, it doesn't matter, oh, I'm gonna get this wrong now, but doing the wrong, something about doing the wrong, it doesn't matter how well you do the wrong thing, that's what it is.
Okay, yeah.
So often we, there's a difference between being productive and busy, for instance. So often we, as business owners, are very busy. Our time, our days are filled. There's no spare time, but that doesn't always mean we're using our time wisely or spending it on the right things.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole, are you too busy to be brilliant? I like that because it's a good reminder that you need to look at what you're doing. So we're so busy and we always, business owners, we always say we're busy, we've got no time, we're, you know, going from one thing to the, rushing from one thing to the next. But often we're, you know, we're so busy, we're not stopping and actually realizing that there's better things to be doing or better, more productive things to be doing. Or maybe some of the things that we spend our time on are actually just not even valuable at all. And sometimes you need to stop and reflect and take stock of what you're actually spending your time on. So, and that kind of hits home and is very relatable to me. And I know Phoebe would say the same. So we both feel busy all the time, but often we don't stop to actually decide, you know, make a, have a look at whether we're doing the right things, I guess.
Sure. One that hit with me was the same from Phil Nosworthy. And knowledge acquisition isn't growth. And the reason I like that, I've heard a version of that before. That hits home with me because I pride myself on always listening to podcasts and going. We go to conferences and stuff. But and your brain tricks itself into thinking going to these conferences, listening to podcasts is you're growing as a person, you're getting better, you're doing something, you're being active. But in fact, if you do nothing with that knowledge or the things that you're learning, it's, you're not growing. You're tricking yourself.
And often it's a short-term hit, I guess. You feel good, you feel motivated, you might do one or two little bits and, things. You leave every one of those conferences, and we mentioned it at the home searching conference that all of this stuff is great, but when you get back on Monday and you're busy, does all of this go out the window, or what are you going to actually change or action? And we've just had one of the busiest weeks we've ever had, last week. So for us, it's a good reminder, like you can't just go back into the doing because nothing's changed. So, you feel good on the Saturday night, the Sunday, but if everything goes back to normal, what was the point of it?
Yeah, so I do like that there has been a few people in our Facebook group, the people who attended the conference, they are still asking questions. One came through today asking for a code that we said we'd get them from one of the suppliers to implement some software. And so props out to those people who are actually taking action and following through. A week and a half later, because it can get lost.
And to add on to that, another thing that Phil had said in that same sort of conversation was, pick the next thing and do that. So often we're overwhelmed, and maybe that's part of the reason we don't go and actually implement new things or try new things, because we're like, well, what do we do first? I want to do 17 different things.
Yeah.
It's like, just pick one.
Pick one,
and do it. And don't procrastinate, don't overthink it. Pick one and do it. And then pick the next thing and do that. Yeah. So it's just little bits of action. You'll look back in months and if you've done, seven of the things that you would hope to do, that's still, a lot of progress.
Better than none.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to some posts that I want to comment on. So the first one from Ryan Holiday, he has a post here. It says, 5 habits that are killing your productivity. So this is around productivity. Number one.
I feel like I'm about to be attacked here.
You don't wake up early. Any comments on that?
I am an early riser. I like the morning. I love the feeling that everyone else is sleeping and it's quiet and I can, it's when I'm feeling the freshest generally in terms of my brain and, being able to actually get in and get something done.
Mm.
So personally, I agree with that. I think it's just, it's time during the day that you can be doing something when other people aren't.
Mm. But that also means you probably need to get to bed a bit early too.
Yes, and I'm guilty of not doing that, so that doesn't always work. But I personally agree with that one.
Number two, you focus on what's outside your control.
Yeah, that one comes back to, I guess, what your mental capacity and where your focus is and where your energy is. If it's focusing on things that you have no control over,
like traffic.
Just things going wrong or, rain.
Weather.
If you put it into a business context for us, it's those things that you can't control. You're better off just getting on with it, finding out a solution, what's the next step, what's the fix. I think you do. You could. I'm guilty at times, and I know everybody does this, but of wasting time on something that worrying about it can't possibly change it. Mm. So just move on or deal with the decisions that need to come from it.
Number three, you're in the wrong crowd.
Yeah, I guess that's another one around what you focus on and what you put your energy to. And that whole, you're the average of the five people around you, all those sorts of things. If you're in the wrong crowd and they're the crowd you're in are focusing on something that isn't, you know, your ambition or your goals or the things that you want to build towards, then, you know, it's taking away mental energy from yourself onto the things that you want, because you're spending it on maybe other things that aren't as important to you.
So. Yeah, and if those people are negative as well,
transform. So I think the people you surround yourself with are very important, personally and in business.
Yeah, and that's why team culture is really important, eh?
Yep, agreed.
Because you're working with those people. Number four, you don't know how to say no.
Yeah, well, that just comes back to being busy and maybe spending your time on the wrong things, right? Like, you should set your own schedule. You should be, especially as business owners and busy business owners. I don't like the word busy because it seems negative to me. It's nothing wrong with having a full schedule, but often same thing. If you're loading your schedule with things that maybe you wouldn't do up if you had picked them yourself, if you hadn't set your own schedule, then maybe it's not the best use of your time. That doesn't mean you can't say yes to things, but it means that you have to be able to say no when it's not in the best interests of yourself or the business or the people around you or your family and those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. And last one, a bit of a different one. You think you'll live forever.
Well, I guess that's about procrastination, isn't it? And
another time.
Exactly. So delaying something that you know is a good idea, but you think there's always more time, or I'll do it later, or I'm focusing on this other thing now. Sometimes it's just about getting in and getting it done, or making a start, or taking action.
I like it.
All right. Very good.
Next one is a bit of a post from Gary Vaynerchuk. People who follow us will know.
Love some Gary B.
Gary V. Okay. Everybody wants to talk about beating the competition. Here are three key pieces of advice for every CEO or business leader looking to stand out. Number one, get comfortable with failure. Failure is just data that you can use to make yourself and your business better. Micro losses mean nothing in the bigger picture. Any comments on that one?
Well, I agree. I guess it's not always an easy thing. It's to, you know, when you lose or something goes wrong or somebody, you know, in competition, you lose a quote to somebody else, you lose work to somebody else. Those things in the moment aren't fun. They're not easy to take. It's not something that you can, you know, just smile about.
But it's going to happen, right? Regardless.
Yeah, but it's going to happen. And I guess it's about the mental strength to go, well, this is what it means to be in business. And like I said, it's data. It's, you know, what can we do differently? It's just part of accepting. You know, it comes back to resilience, I guess. Like, as a business leader, you need to be resilient. You need to be okay with taking those losses and moving on and onwards and upwards.
Yep. Number two, understand the importance of humility. So humility gives you the advantage of speed. When you're humble, you're never too good to follow your curiosity and try new things or even change your mind when you realize you're wrong. It allows you to bounce back quicker from those micro losses and get back to executing.
I think I agree with that as well. I mean, the first thing that came to mind was from a marketing point of view and trying new things. Like, if you're stuck in this mindset of this is the type of video I want to do, or I'm only on these platforms and I wouldn't even look at TikTok, or somebody mentioned LinkedIn, but why would I do LinkedIn content? Like, at the end of the day, being humble and going, well, I don't know the answer, so let's just try and find out what works. Yeah, curiosity is a good one for that as well. So
that was a bit one of Phil's slides. He crossed out certainty and said curious or curiosity.
Yeah, and around leadership and, I think that's a good one. I agree with most of that as well.
And last one, don't dwell on the competition, focus on the game. Instead of worrying about what others are doing, I focus my attention on the consumer and day trading attention, which is exactly what helped me stand out.
Yep, I think it's important to find that balance. Like, I agree with the mentality, just focus on your own, you know, stay in your own lane, stay in your own lane, that's probably not the way to put it, but focus on what you're doing, focus on what you can do better, what your strengths are, what you can deliver. But at the same time, I guess there's value in knowing where what your competitors are doing sometimes, as long as it doesn't bog you down or limit your thinking or you're focusing too much on what they're doing and not on what you're doing. So I think it's important to have maybe 95% of the focus just inwards. We're doing what we're doing. We've got our own innovations, our own ideas. But knowing what the competition is doing can give you ideas as well. You know, it's maybe from our point of view, I'm just trying to think of an example, you know, knowing what the competitors are doing from a pricing point of view for us lets us be very deliberate about where we sit in the marketplace, for instance.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe is an important part. But for the most part, I agree. Just focus on what you're doing.
Cool. All right, two more to go. Two more posts, that is. So the next one is an image you've got in front of you, and I'll put it up on video for the people, but obviously I'll have to describe it for the podcast listeners. So It's an image, a pie chart, with the heading is most important motivators at work. So it's really about motivating teams. Now, the biggest slice of the pie there, Jake, is recognize me. I think there was some text. No, the text is gone. I only saved this. But basically, it was around these are the factors that, again, I don't know who they surveyed or where it's come from. I might have to, you know, get some source material for the next one. Actually look into it. But being recognized as the most important factor for motivating staff at work. Now, there are a lot of others. So some say they're self-motivated. Some want autonomy. Some want more money. Some want more training. But it looks like, at least in this survey, recognition is one of the most important things. What do you think about that?
There's a couple of interesting things as I look at this. I mean, recognize me being by far the biggest.
37%, I should
say. Yeah, probably isn't a huge surprise to me. Maybe it is for some people because, you know, if you were to, it'd be interesting to ask. I assume that this is a survey of people giving their own response to what motivates them. Mm. It'd be interesting to know the almost reverse of this to say, for business owners, what do you think motivates your employees?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I would guess that a lot of employees just think it's money.
Money, yeah.
Money or pay me more in this case is only 7%. It's number, five on this list. Recognition is often just, you know, about thanks or you've done a great job or like it can be bigger or smaller than that, but it's just when people do great work, letting them know that they've done great work and I guess that feeling, and everybody loves that they've done a good job, right? The number two one here, nothing, I'm self-motivated, that's interesting to me. That's such a big portion of it.
That. Yeah, I would have liked to see the questions.
That's. I mean, the rest of it kind of makes sense, I guess. Like the recognition. Well, actually, I guess what comes out of this to me is recognition is such a simple thing, and it sounds based on these answers that in the survey they've separated recognition with promotion and pay rise because those are different options on this pie chart. And if that's the case, recognition doesn't have to cost anything.
No.
Or it can cost very little. It's just about you as a leader and how you interact with your team and how you go about acknowledging when certain things, you know, good work is done. Things like giving me autonomy, inspiring me, like their numbers, three and four as well. Like all of these things are more about leadership to me, or how I interpret them, it's more about leadership as opposed to pay them more, give them promotions, you know, that sort of thing. So what it says is leadership is a very, or, you know, a huge component. It's almost three quarters of the responses there are all around leadership to me.
Yep. And just briefly, the one there's another associated chart that says whose recognition matters the most. So where is it coming from? It doesn't really apply to us too much because we don't have all these layers of management. We've got a couple, but the manager is at 28%, the company leader 24%, the manager's manager 12%. Again, that's kind of hard to say. Yep. And then peers 9%, customer 10%, other 17%. So it's sort of saying, I guess the biggest one there is the manager. The person's manager.
Well, it's over half is the manager, which is your direct report, I guess, because the manager's manager would be like when you've got, like you said, multiple levels. Mm. That's, you know, it's still important, but it's lower down. So it's really your direct manager and the owner of the company, the boss, I guess. So like that, to over half of the recognition coming from those people as the most important. Interesting, I guess. And again, in our context, we don't have all those layers of management. But what it says is that the people who are underneath you, recognition from you as either the business owner or their direct report is like, it's critical.
Yep, I better go tell the boys that they're doing a good job over there after this podcast. All right, the last article here. I heard this on a podcast a long time ago and I really liked it, so I Googled it. Well, I LinkedIn'd it and I found an article around it. So I'm gonna throw it to you. I don't know if I've mentioned this to you before, but it's called the article, The Art of Decisiveness, Mastering Jeff Bezos' Two-Way Door Strategy. So I'll just read a bit of info here. In the dynamic landscape of business transformation, making decisions, decisive choices is paramount. So he has a thing called the two-way door metaphor. It offers a brilliant roadmap for this journey, providing a clear framework for distinguishing between reversible and irreversible decisions. So a two-way decision is reversible. You think of the door, it comes, you can reverse it and come back. Whereas the one-way door decision, which are more of the game changer decisions, the ones where you really need to in-depth analysis, significant investment, whatever, that's an irreversible decision.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it comes to implementing the strategy, like a practical application, it involves cultivating a culture where quick and autonomous decision-making is encouraged for reversible choices, and by providing a more meticulous approach for the irreversible decisions.
Yep.
So, I don't know, any comment, any thoughts come on that one?
Well, I guess the first thought that comes to mind is that in reality, I think, well, no, not in reality. In reality, most decisions as a business owner, if we're actually breaking it down, are reversible.
Mm.
Whereas I think most of us think that a lot of those decisions that feel super important are the one-way type.
Mm.
Things like hiring somebody feels like a one-way type to a lot of people. We're going to bring on the
wrong
person.
Which is what your talk at conference is all about.
Exactly, and this is going to impact my business if it doesn't work out. The reality is it's a reversible decision.
Mm.
Even things like buying a truck or getting a warehouse, like if you put into our context, those are big, what I call, I guess, for us, inflection points. They're things that they are a big step forward as a home staging business. You get a warehouse or you get a truck and it changes the way that you can do business. They're both reversible, though.
True, true.
You know, if things don't work out, you know, yes, you're signing a lease. There's things you can sublease. You can pay to get out of a lease. You can sell a truck. Like, yes, they're harder things to reverse, but I think a lot of
those sort of decisions cost time and money, but they are reversible.
Yeah, I think there's very little that's not reversible in some way. Without, like you said, there might be some small cost or time.
I suppose
time.
If you sold the business, that would be pretty...
Yeah, there's some major things that maybe, you know, you let somebody go who was fantastic in certain ways and you can't get them back. Like, I'm trying to actually think of an example and I can't come up with one at the moment. But the other thing that comes to mind, just to add on to, is it Jeff Bezos's?
Yeah.
Gary Vee has a similar sort of, or actually something that kind of fits well with this, which is making a decision is, the most important thing is to make the decision. Make a fast decision. Because... even if you, like, we all sit back and look at those sort of decisions and go, oh, I made the wrong one, it would have worked out this way if I did the other one. The reality is you have no idea how it would have worked out if you chose the other option. So a lot of people worry about the what if scenario. Mm. Make a decision and move on.
Yeah.
And that's not easy, but.
This might be a bit crass or silly, but what sticks with me in those situations is if you think you're gonna make the wrong decision or you made a decision and you're going, oh, you're questioning yourself, think, well, you know what, if I made that other decision, and there's a bit of regret around not making that decision. I could have been on my way to work or something at a different time, a different location, could have got in a car accident.
Yeah, like, exactly right.
It's a bit of a crass thing, but I'm like, I always try and remember that because I'm like, you just never know. Even what seems like a mistake, you just never know how your life could have changed.
Exactly right.
So, I think you will never know.
Yeah, and I think as a business owner, the important thing, like I said, is that the decision itself.
Mm.
Just make the decision. It doesn't matter what it is more often than not. Like hire the person or don't, or get the warehouse or don't, or take on the work or don't. Like you just make the decision and then go ahead and do what you need to do to make that decision work for your business.
Love it. All right, well, we've been running for just over 20 minutes. I think that's a good place to stop, Jake. I thought this was a nice little podcast.
I like it. Yes, great idea.
Yeah, cool. We will try and do it more regularly, maybe fortnightly. Weekly might be pushing it, but we'll see how we go. If you've got any questions or anything, any feedback on this episode, let us know. Otherwise, I've been Cody and you have been?
I have been Jake.
And I'm still Jake.
Still.
Jake. Thanks for listening and we'll catch you in the next one.
Thanks.